What's up and welcome back to Kind of Funny's Indiana Jones in Review. That's right, we are ranking and reviewing every Indiana Jones movie. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Pleasure to be here, Tim Geddes. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. One of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Nick's a troublemaker, and then I get in trouble for it, and I don't like it.
The new face of video games, Blessing at AOEA Jr.
How's it going, everybody?
Really good. Really good, Bless. And of course, we have the producer slash seducer slash troublemaker, Nick Scarpino.
But in Latin, Jehovah starts with an I.
Does he always talk like that?
Yeah, he's Scottish.
That's the way he talks.
Is that a Scottish accent?
What do you mean?
It seems like extremely, like, a lot.
That's Sean Connery, man. When you go back and watch him as Bond, that's why everyone... Queen. Yeah, that's what he did. He's the iconic voice to do. Everyone can do him.
You think, like, on his deathbed, he was like, I actually talk like this.
It was all like,
what's up, guys?
I'm from Paramus.
It's like the first time I heard Pedro Pascal talk. I was like, why is he a dork? He's like, I really like being in Disney movies. They're really fun. You're like, what?
What? This is In Review. Each and every week, we rank and review two different movie franchises. Right now, we are doing Indiana Jones and Magic Mike. We got Magic Mike Double XL coming up very soon. But today, we ain't talking about that. We're talking about Indiana Jones. You could watch this on YouTube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. You can also listen to it as a podcast. Just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny Reviews. Will be right there for you. But if you want to get the show ad-free, if you want to watch the show live as it's being recorded, if you want to be a Patreon producer like Graham of Legend, David Mintel, Al Tribesman, Cassandra Ramirez, Sven McHale, James Davis, and the Nanobiologist did, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny. We'd appreciate it. Every dollar helps. But you know what helps the most? The Platinum tier, Greg. What's the Platinum tier this month?
Wouldn't you like to know?
The Kind of Funny Puppy Valentine's Day Prince.
Got him, man. I'm the troublemaker. That's what it is.
Listen, I did kindoffunny.com/platinum. I update it once a month. I'm sorry,
truly,
I can't remember everything.
Clueless.
You know what I mean? There.
You can go to kindoffunny.com/platinum to see what's up. We're brought to you by Babbel, but I'll talk to you about that later. For now, let's talk about Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Now, without going too far into this, is anyone else a little bewildered that they didn't just straight up call it Indiana Jones and the Holy Grail?
No, because I think the
Crusade.
Yeah, that's fair. That's probably fair, actually. They probably didn't want to get too involved with that. But I like the idea of The Last Crusade because it has a lot to do with sort of the B story of this movie and how they're
My question would be back to you is, knowing nothing about the Indiana Jones franchise, I know obviously there's been another one. We're watching it next week. But at the time, was this set to be the end? Because I always took it as a kid that it was a double entendre, right? Of like, oh, the Crusade, but also this is Sean Connery's last Crusade, but it's also maybe our last time with Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, they didn't do another one for like 10 years or 15 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when did Crystal Skull come out? It was way later. It was like at least a decade later. Yeah.
Once Shia LaBeouf won an Emmy, they were like, what do you want to do? He's like, one more Indiana Jones. Fuck, this kid's golden Hollywood. He's not going to have a breakdown. Let's get him in a movie.
I just thought it was weird because, like, you know, we watched the last couple movies of Indiana Jones collecting all these things that, like, I haven't heard of. But it's like, then they say the Holy Grail. I'm like, that's cool as shit. I don't know. It would have worked for me. Blessing, what's up?
I don't know shit about the latest Indiana Jones movie because I just knew it came out and everybody didn't like it. Is Shia LaBeouf Indiana Jones in the last Indiana Jones movie?
You'll find out next week. You'll find out next week.
Strap in your seat, Blessing.
I'm right there with you. I just know Shia LaBeouf's in it, but to what extent? I don't know.
I'm so excited.
But today, we're talking about Last Crusade. Runtime of 2 hours and 8 minutes. Released on May 24th, 1989. 5 years after the second movie. It's a long ass time.
Once again, trying to get on the coattails of Ghostbusters, you know what I mean? Embarrassing.
Exactly. Trying to get on the coattails. Directed by Steven Spielberg, music by John Williams, a budget of $48 million, and a box office of $474.3 million. At the time of its release, the film was the 11th highest grossing film of all time, despite competition from Greg Miller and Nick Scarpino in the forms of Batman 1989 and Ghostbusters 2, The Last Crusade became the highest grossing film of 1989. So there you go.
I'd say up there, deservedly so, deserves to be up there.
Awards.
No accounting for taste is what I'd say.
It won an Academy Award for Best Sound Effects Editing. And there you go. Steven Spielberg said this is his favorite of the Indiana Jones movies. And when George Lucas met with Steven Spielberg to discuss a third Indiana Jones movie, he wanted to have it set in a haunted mansion, which sounds really cool. But Spielberg had just finished Poltergeist. He was like, nah, let's do something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me because, I'm sorry, are you done with the trivia?
I'm done. Go for it, Nick. Go for it.
I just think this movie is like a masterclass on how to make an Indiana Jones movie. It's like they took all the things that I had criticisms of from Raiders and Temple of Doom, and they were like, let's fix those just for Nick. Because this movie is so fun for me to watch every single time. And I just love how I just love the end of it and how it kind of – you do feel fulfilled. You do feel like it's the last hurrah and they've done what they need to do and the relationships have been repaired and people have grown and they ride off into the sunset as Salah laughs at Literally. Indy for being named after the dog. It's fucking great. It's perfect.
I'm right there with you. The only thing I disagree with is that you said that it's just for Nick. No, it was for me too, man. I thought this one worked a lot better than the first two did. I think that it maybe never hit any of the highest highs of one or two, but I think that overall I was engaged the most. I always understood what was going on. It didn't have the woman character from the last movie, which goes a very long way. I don't think that Sean Connery is as good as Short Round was in terms of just being a sidekick, making interesting things happen for Indy. But overall, I was like really into it. I do think that it ran a bit long and there was a whole maybe middle section that I was like, whoa, okay, we still have the three challenges to do. That's pretty
crazy. When he gets in the fighter plane, you're like, oh, we have a whole other action set piece here that we didn't know about. But the end of that's the best. I remember my Charlemagne.
As we've said a bunch of times in this, I can't believe how much Uncharted is just like, fuck you.
Straight up.
Like, hey, here's a train. Cool. I'm like, wow. And oh, hey, I'm young in this. And all it's like, whoa, there's just a lot of similarities there. But
I have
had a good time with all of them.
I have questions for the people who have never seen this before. So the first thing that they get you with, did you think it was Indiana Jones in the mine in Monument Valley?
I did.
I was confused as hell.
They got me. I was like, I fucking thought Harrison Ford is still in this. And when you saw the dude, I was like, oh, well, I guess they casted him out. And then when you learn that the kid is actually Indiana Jones, I was like, smart, you got me. I'm sure this got people in the 80s too. All comes full circle.
It absolutely got us. Well, actually, River Phoenix was a huge star, so it was widely publicized that he was in it as like to some degree, I think, if I remember. I don't remember being shocked by River Phoenix being in it and being indie. I remember thinking that was like maybe not a thing, but there was that nice reveal. The second question I have for you guys, so people haven't seen it yet, did you trip the fuck out on the third challenge where he has to do the leap of faith?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my favorite scene in any Spielberg movie right there. I fucking love that effect. It's so well done where like the camera motion controls over to the right and you see it and then it goes back and it's like perfectly painted. So you have to be standing right at the perfect isotopic symmetrical 3¼ point view. It doesn't matter. It's fucking great.
It's the most unbelievable thing about the movie, but it's still cool. It's really dumb. Like the lighting has to be perfect. They have to be in the exact situations. I feel like anybody else walking up on the ledge would have been like, oh, yeah, it's here. Like, but it's just it's tricking the audience. It's not it can't. There's no way it could trick Indy.
It's darker in there. You know, what I mean, it's darker in there than you think.
It's darker. It's cave.
Got it.
And he's like, okay. Nah, man, Andy, it's not going to happen.
It was really stupid, but I loved it. Like, I liked how silly it was because at first you don't know how. I mean, obviously, these movies get very supernatural. These movies get very fantastical. So the idea of an invisible walkway, I was totally up for until you see the camera change. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. But for a while, I thought it was just an invisible walkway. I thought it was just going to be you just have to walk on this thing that you don't even know if there's a floor there, you know?
I thought that, too. I'm happy it wasn't, though. I like that this one didn't have all the crazy shit.
I think it's a cool concept.
It had
a man who was alive for centuries.
Yeah. But sorry. I mean, hey, that's not that crazy, though.
I mean, then the other guy drank it and then fucking aged a million years.
Well, but that's what I like about this one, right? Is that like so I'll disagree with you a little bit on this one, Tim, because I don't think that Sean Connery's character is the sidekick. I think he actually is in place of the love interest. I think the B story is about them not having a relationship. And I think this is really the only indie movie that has
fucking?
Yeah, they're definitely having sex.
Weird.
There's definitely a father.
They're like, well, if you had sex with that girl and I had sex with that girl, we've basically had sex. We should just seal this deal.
I meant more sidekick in the sense of like having who's having him around on the adventure with that he's like talking with, which in the first movie was Marianne, and the second movie was Short Round, and the third movie is Sean Connery.
But what I like about this is I like that there is actual character development there, and they gave his character, after three movies, it's very difficult to have a compelling character arc for Indiana Jones, who really didn't have that much to begin with. But what I love about this, I love the scene where they come out of it and he asks his dad what he found, and his dad looks at his son for the first time and goes, illumination. And it's because that B story was so strong, and like the constant little like jabs at each other, where every single time Indy does anything amazing, he looks at his dad and his dad's like checking his fucking fingernails and all that stuff, just being complete disappointment, and then having that come full circle. I thought that was the strongest aspect of this. And I really think that Harrison Ford and Sean Connery just had unbelievable chemistry in this. Like they either hated each other or they loved each other. And I don't know which one's better, but man, every time they're on screen, I'm just like, it's that they nail the familial relationship of just how much the person in your family can get under your skin with just the littlest fucking thing, you know?
Sean Connery was Steven Spielberg's first choice to play Indiana Jones. He specifically wanted him because he says, quote, James Bond is the father of Indiana Jones.
Mm.
And that's cool awesome. As shit.
That's cool. That's cool. Cool.
Shout out to River Phoenix's Harrison Ford impersonation. Really good.
It belongs in a museum.
Just River doing Phoenix all the
awesome.
He was doing all the little kind of quirks and
DJ looks Kento out. In the YouTube chat said that he had played his son in a different movie. So he like for this movie, he like already had those mannerisms down.
That's cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
Harrison Ford asked for him specifically.
I thought he did a great job. And that sort of fake out moment. Initially, you see the hat, you think that's Indy. And then he looks up and it's like, wow, why does this guy look exactly like Indy? Like, what are they doing? And then they have the kid go, Indy. Indiana, and talking to his friend, it's like, okay, good job, movie. I thought the movie was really fun and entertaining. I had more fun with it than the last movie. I really enjoyed Sean Connery and Harrison Ford's back and forth. I think when they're both on screen, Nick nailed it. Like that familial relationship, it's so good for the audience. I think it was instantly entertaining, and I was happy there was more of it, right? We get to that later part of the movie, and you're like, oh, shit, they still have to do the three challenges. I'm excited to watch what this actually is. And I think Blessing, and I don't know if Blessing was the only one who had sort of criticisms of kind of like globe-trotting stuff going from area to area. I enjoyed that here. I'm glad that we got more of that, and we're going to different spaces. And, that final challenge is really neat, and I wasn't expecting the old man to actually be there. I thought he was going to be. I thought that the one of the three, whatever the hell they call him, was a figment of his imagination. And then when homegirl and the bad guy walk in at the end, I thought it was going to be who are you talking to, Indy? Like, there's nobody there.
I thought the exact same thing.
But I really enjoyed it. It was a damn good movie. Very solid all the way through.
I'm right there with you, Andy, that I think. You know, you mentioned that you had more fun with this movie. I think I had more fun with Temple of Doom, but this movie just feels like a way more solid movie than Temple of Doom, where Tim mentioned that this movie doesn't have like the high highs of some of the other ones. And that's kind of where I sat with Temple of Doom last week, where I think the highs in Temple of Doom are so good, but then the lows are just really low when you look at what the things that are wrong with that movie. And this one felt like it took some of the really good stuff about Temple of Doom and how they kept that action going. And the things about Raiders of the Lost Ark that made that movie solid, and they really took the best of both worlds and really developed it and made this movie. Like you guys mentioned, his dad, like as a replacement for Short Round, I think, or replacement in a weird way, but you know what I mean? Like as the character that he's hanging out with the whole time, one of our complaints, I think kind of both me and Tim in the first movie was that Indiana doesn't feel as fleshed out of a character, and he didn't really have much going for him. Whereas in this movie, Pierce Brosnan, Sean Connery. I keep wanting to call him Pierce Brosnan because I just know him as James
Bond.
Call
that's Pierce Brosnan Bond. Now, that's okay.
Yeah, Pierce Brosnan. Sean Connery does such a good job of creating so much character for Indiana Jones and giving Harrison Ford stuff to work off of and giving him backstory and reasons for us to care about him as the audience. And I thought that stuff was just so well done. It is very much obvious that this is very much a response to whatever the reaction to Temple of Doom was, because
straight up
this movie is so Raiders of the Lost Ark in so many ways, and it kind of feels like watching Star Wars Episode 7 and being like, oh yeah, this feels a lot like A New Hope. But even with that, I still think they did a good job and rocked it, and I was very into the movie. I would have wanted to see what that haunted house movie looked like though, because I want, for a movie that is so much trying to be Raiders of the Lost Ark, I wonder if that would have been more Temple of Doom, and I'm kind of curious about that. But overall, really enjoy this movie. Had a really good time.
Greg Miller, what do you think?
I mean, it's a hodgepodge of everything everybody else has said. Great movie, obviously. What I find, though, is, and this is something interesting we've stumbled upon here with Indiana Jones in review, for a series I've watched as a kid but then never doubled back to as an adult, and as a kid didn't have an attachment to, you know, really. I never really idolized it or, you know, grew up thinking about it and loving Indiana Jones. I find myself having such a hard time with both this one and Temple of Doom to shake what I thought as a kid, if that makes sense. And so, yes, this is a great movie, obviously. I'm not taking any shots at it that way. But there's something about it to me that feels old. And since I finished watching, I've been trying to put that into words and struggling with it. Where, and I know, stay with me for 2 seconds. Part of it is I feel like Temple of Doom was more whimsical and fantastical. And yes, I know this movie ends with us talking to a 700-year-old man who's been living in a cave, not taking that away. But there's, I don't know if it's the colors or and how vibrant and how weird the world was that we were thrown into with Temple of Doom. I felt, again, higher highs. I was in it for that part of the ride. Whereas this one there, I remember checking my watch and be like, still going. Okay, oh, another set piece like you're talking about. Yeah, in what Last Crusade does, and I don't think is a knock necessarily, especially because my justification up until Kingdom of Crystal Skull was always that it was also the last crusade for them, the last hurrah. Mm-hmm. It feels at times like a greatest hits of what we've seen before, which is fan service for people who are super into it, and even me watching all three of these movies in a row, totally get it and like it, but at some point it got cheesy. However, though, it's also the fact of I'm 37 years old right now and how much Indiana Jones is in the pop culture and the zeitgeist all the time, where when he throws the Nazi out the window, I was like, all right, is he going to turn around and say no ticket in German this time? And he goes, no ticket. And I was like, huh? And I was like, wait, is that the first time he said no ticket? Because I had to Google it and be like, ah, shit, that's the first. I thought this was a throwback already to something else, because obviously I've seen it done so many times, let alone Dogma. And I know it from the Kevin Smith reference more than I know it from Indiana Jones. And it's like, it's this weird hodgepodge of everything people have said, my own preconceived notions of it and everything else. And yeah, for me, I like the highs, the color, the foreign world we were tossed into, not literally and in the racist sense that it was, you know what I mean, but the more crazy landscape of Temple of Doom and Short Round more than I liked this one, although I appreciate this, and again, it's a joy to see Harrison Ford and Sean Connery on screen together.
Yeah, one thing that surprised me now that we're done with the three classic of these movies and having not seen them before is they are so good, but they just kind of lack a level of excitement because, you know, we're like, what, everything you just said, Greg, it's like we've seen so many of these things in pop culture before. We've seen this type of movie done so many times. I can't even imagine watching this in the 80s. Like, I can't imagine. It seems so next level and so much. The action alone and the set pieces are so fucking crazy. Nowadays, it's just kind of like, oh, this is what a movie looks like. And like, you got to give credit to them for like, wow, you guys really redefined what a movie not only can be, but just is, like, baseline. And so that's been kind of weird for me watching these, where I'm kind of just like, oh, wow, it's a little slow, or like, that wasn't that creative, or that wasn't that clever of a task for them to do or whatever. But it's just because
I don't think I've ever sat down as a kid or as an adult or whatever. I don't think I've ever sat down and watched this movie uncut, like on a VHS. It would have always been on CBS or something as a kid. And so like, I remember really parts of this vividly, other parts not so much. And like, when they get to Venice and they go to the church that's been turned into a library, and he's like, literally, like, you want to talk about like, oh fuck, Uncharted, of like, this one says seven, this one says three, where's the X? And then he goes up like a flight and a half of stairs, and like, ah, there's the X. Like, you didn't fucking see that from the ground? Like, what a cheesy
yeah, but that was all, like, that was always obviously a joke for the earlier line when he's in class and he's like, X,
sure, I'm just saying, I think there was more creative ways to do it, but yes, sure, I understand, but that it was a call back to the joke.
I mean, yeah, obviously, like, Raiders of the Lost Ark was we got to get the thing to get to the thing to get to the thing to get to the thing, right? And that's more of what this movie is, and that's probably why for it might feel slow for some people, but what the thing that I really appreciate about it is, like, this is Spielberg at almost probably his best. I've seen that beginning of this movie at least 20 times in my life, and that train sequence is still super fun for me. It's just a very, very well-paced out, very well-choreographed action sequence that's super creative and fun. And like, when he falls into the lion cage or the lion car and has to grab the whip, when I was a kid, I was like, Is that where he got the fucking whip from? Like, and then he gives himself the scar.
He gives himself the scar. Like, no, that first opening is amazing. Yeah, so let alone the fact that it's him becoming Indiana Jones, right? Yeah. And getting the hat at the end and be like, oh,
God, and the guy telling him, like, the guy giving him probably the most important piece of advice ever, where he's like, you lost today, kid, but it doesn't mean you have to like it. And he's just like, and then it cuts to him immediately losing again when he's like, you know, 30 years later. It's so fucking great. So that scene and the scene with the tank, those are always the two I look forward to coming back to, because I think those are so, what he does with that first scene is super fun, obviously, like turning it on its side, fooling you a little bit. The scene with the tank, I think, is just such a great way to show two planes of action happening at the same time. You've got Indy trying his hardest outside to save his dad, and then Marcus and him are just not getting it inside. They're like, the magnitude of the situation is just has not really hit him inside until way later. But I love all the stuff with the pen and all that stuff. So cool.
The moment of the gun falling down, and Sean Connery looking at the gun while there's a gun pointed at him. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's just the dumbest like cartoon moment. As if the guy pointed the gun at him would have just been like, oh, let me grab that real quick. But like the gun's pointed at him and Sean Connery's like, oh, like I'm going to get my
The thing that always gets a laugh out of me every single time is when Indy, it's such a good little joke on the audience. Indy's standing on the tank, Vogel stands up, and they're squaring off against each other. And he takes one step, and a fucking homie just comes in from nowhere. And it cuts out wide, and there's just a whole truck full of soldiers that just pulled up alongside the tank, and they're all jumping on there to fight him. It's like,
this franchise is so good at that.
You're not done with the level yet.
They're so good, and the minecarts did that in the last movie, where it's just like there's always the perfect amount of things that Indy has to overcome. I really appreciate that. Let's get to the plot.
It's coming, guys.
Here we go, everybody.
It's the plot, Nick. Tell us the plot. Tell us the plot, Nick. Please tell us the plot.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. You lost today, kid, but it doesn't mean you have to like it. Or, I wrote down an alt line here, it belongs in a museum, which he says a lot. We fade from the Paramount logo to a rock formation in Monument Valley as troops of scouts make their way across.
Not their best cut.
They didn't try that hard on this one. They did not try that hard on this one. They dismount and Herman falls on his ass. He and another scout that we don't know who it is yet head to a nearby cave and spot an illegal dig. The man leading the dead looks a lot like Indy from behind, but when he turns around, it's someone else. And I just imagine that Blessing was like, whatever. The real Indy, of course, is River Phoenix. Gotcha, Tim. Gotcha, Blessing. You didn't know that. The bandits are stealing something called the Coronado Cross, and it belongs in a museum, and he's not scared of snakes this time. And you're like, huh, I wonder where he developed that phobia. Maybe we'll see that on the train later. He sends Herman back to get the sheriff and sneaks down to steal the cross. He snaps a log on the way up, and bandits take off after him. They chase him, of course, to the train to catch up as they catch up to him. And the reptile cage, he falls in with giant bins of snakes and shit, and then falls into one of the snakes. They look all like garden snakes. I'm like, come on, bro, you wouldn't be that scared about him. But this apparently is why he hates snakes. So we've explained that away.
And they're just in every crevice possible.
Everything.
He's still finding those snakes
everywhere. Yeah, to this day. I was gonna say that we get a lot of obvious, you know, nods to what makes him Indy. But I was waiting for him to meet a girl on that train and bang her. Like, I was oh, this is where he becomes a womanizer guy.
This is where he learns he can't be resisted.
Yeah.
the soloization of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
Of course, we get a fun scene with Rhino here. The spikes almost go through his crotch. Let's see.
I thought it was the cobra that really scared him.
Well, the one, the water moccasin, that one's...
Yeah, the one that like stands up, the really fake one.
That really fake looking one. That definitely scared the shit.
I think that was like the one that made him go, oh, poisonous snakes.
Don't like snakes.
Yeah.
This again is why I put this in here as like a cool point of choreography. He has that moment where he looks over and he grabs on a little swingy thing, swings, knocks a dude off, and as he lands, the camera like pans up and he's standing right in front of Fedora guy, and the guy's like, come on, kid, what the fuck are we doing here? Then he runs into the lion's car, grabs the whip, defends himself, but the first strike lands over his chin, and he's like, what's going on here? But this whip and I just feel like we're simpatico.
Is how it's supposed to be.
Exactly. Goes up. Gets stuck for a second when Fedora guy's there, and then one of the snakes magically comes out of his thing and saves him, and then he goes downstairs and uses a magic box to escape the car. And again, I love how this is shot, because as he, it's like one fluid motion where they look and he's not, they open the thing and it just collapses and he's not there anymore, and as they run out they open and it rack zooms over to Indy as he's fucking running his ass. I don't know how he jumps. I mean, it's magic, Andy. It's magic.
That's crazy. I mean, that's got to be that's got to be some artifact that they found in some ancient civilization too. Like,
how this is the first. Well, it's more the fact that, yeah, the magic box has, you know, the breakaway trap door or whatever. But, like, so they're doing the magic on the train. Like, they're walking people in. Like, that's where it is.
Open up the side of the train. Pull up. There you go.
Yeah, magic, like, he must have gone through the bottom of the train. But, like, wow, he escaped really safely.
Of course, Indy heads home to the Joneses' residence, where his father is there counting and studying his manuscripts about the Holy Grail. We see some of the stained glass windows and stuff like that we're going to see later. Herman shows back up with the sheriff, who is firmly on the side of Fedora, which is the name of the character, and his men. They come in and they steal the cross from Indy and then give it to their boss outside, also named after a hat. Tim, can you guess what this guy's name is? Panama hat. That's what his name is.
Panama.
He wears a Panama hat. He's super into Van Halen also. Mm-hmm. They're all super excited about that, except for Fedora, who sees Indy forlorn and turns to him and offers some words of encouragement. Like I said, you lost today, kid, but it doesn't mean you have to like it. Then he puts his hat on him and dips his head. And as his head comes back up, we get a match cut.
So
and
it's good.
Harrison Ford. It is the late 30s now, and he's on a boat and is getting his ass beat in once more by Panama Hat. It was like, we meet again, Dr. Jones. Once again, I am taking something from you. And it's the Coronado Cross, and he's like,
let me guess. Like, Panama Hat, did you drink from the fucking cup of the Holy Grail already? Because you haven't aged a day. Yeah. You look fantastic.
I also have that. Yeah, I have it. All hell breaks loose. Indy breaks out, grabs the cross, jumps overboard just as a thing slaps into some dynamite. For some reason, they're keeping explosives on the deck, and it just blows up the entire ship. We get a nice, cool shot where he's floating, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. We see Panama's hat float by him with a giant hole in it and indicate that he is dead. We're back in class, and Indy...
Nick, how do you get out of that water? There's a big old storm going on.
There's a whole, I mean, he's a
Indiana
big
Jones,
storm
man. Someone found him. They're like, we got a floaty. Yeah. Huh. Oh, that's right. He did have a little floaty, Greg. Those things save everyone.
Yeah, so who's coming? Get a pool noodle.
How did he get out of the freaking magic box, Tim and Greg? It's magic. I don't know. Greg, I don't have the answer for it. Okay,
we gotta understand that.
Not
maybe...
written on the page. Last time we did one of the first time we ever did, you're over there talking about Steven Spielberg seeing penises and making E.T. a thing, and you're gonna tell me that was written on the page for you?
I thought you
sometimes did. you see between the lines. It's a space within spaces, between spaces, sure. Greg. The space
spaces. No future spoilers.
Back in class, Indy is telling his kids what it really takes to be an archaeologist. He's like, listen, most of that stuff, 90% archaeology, Tim, is done in the library. Don't follow maps to bury treasure, and X never, ever marks the spot. Of course, Marcus comes in, and Indy gives him the cross, and Marcus is like, this is great. Well, this is going to have a great place in our Spanish heritage portion of the museum. And he's like, cool. And then... he goes to his office, where it's just a madhouse because he hasn't done office hours apparently.
I love this part. This is a great bit because it has been for two movies. Like, you're a fucking teacher? Like, when? How are you doing? Like, yeah, to get there and have it be everyone desperately needs them. The secretary's over his shit. These term papers still need to be graded.
And what everybody needs to do, if you haven't watched the movie yet, or you just maybe you're just here watching this video because you like hearing us talk about movies, go watch that part of the movie. And there's this woman behind Indy giving him the weirdest look. It's like, dude, you should like. This woman does not know what she's doing in this scene. She just like, she's doing this thing, Greg. You got to look back at it. Just rewind.
Is she like
to the part.
Is she like the guy in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, remember? Or was she like,
It's one of those, but like, she's Spider-Man not doing anything like overly silly. She's just sticking out like a sore thumb because everybody else in the scene is frantic. And Dr. Jones, and she's just like doing this thing. It's really
dumb. I'm looking at it right now. She's just staring. She's like staring into the distance.
And it goes on, Greg. And I'm watching. On.
can you send it to assets?
Just a screenshot.
I want it. Whatever Bless is looking at.
Well, I mean, I'm watching on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I'm on Amazon Prime. I can screenshot this. Let me get this good shot of her, though. Yeah, here it is. Really, I got a perfect one. Hold on.
It's really
Barrett,
weird, dude.
Prepare your Slack for boarding. Ew.
Is it the alarm?
That's the boarding alarm. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, is it the girl with the oh, my God. What is she doing?
Green headband.
Right?
Yeah.
I think
I'm sending it to
him.
Assets. It's going to assets.
It looks like she's trying to do the stare of like adoration, but it's not working. It is
it
not working.
Work.
Hey, but it worked because we see her. The hardest thing about being you try to be an extra, man. Like, nobody ever sees you in the shop, but we see this woman now, and we'll never forget her.
That's Academy Award winner Meryl Streep. Right, wow. Just to know it, man. That's her first role. Let's see. He, of course, does not want to deal with any of this stuff. He grabs his mail, which includes a diary-sized package, and just leaves. He just does what all of us would probably do and be like, he just bangs out the window as he walks down. What's up?
I said peace. I'm saying
peace out. A group of scary dudes approach him, and you think he's in the shit once again, but guess what? Danny ain't in the shit. He's in the penthouse. Donovan has invited him over, introduces himself to Indy, and shows him half a stone from the mid-12th century, which tells him the remaining part of the location to the Holy Grail, the chalice used by Christ, the Last Supper, the cup that caught his blood during the crucifixion. Are we looking at the picture?
There she is. And what you need to understand is like that's just one look, but she's doing this for at least 20 seconds straight. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre looking.
She looks way too much.
It's one of the most bizarre things ever, yeah.
Let's see. Eternal life, the gift of youth from whoever drinks from the grail. Every man's dream, including my father. And Donovan tells him that the myth about the three knights, the last crusade, who were charged with protecting the grail and lived hella long. There are two markers. The one that they found, which is half broken, and there's one entombed with one of the knights, which we think is in Venice, but they had a snag. Their project leader has gone missing. You got the wrong Jones, man. Why don't you find my father? And Donovan goes, your father was the project leader. He's the one that's gone missing.
That's wow, we are getting ready for a movie, everybody.
Hell yeah.
Sit the fuck down.
Indy, of course, rushes over to his dad's house to discover it's been ransacked. Thankfully, they didn't find what they were looking for because was sent the diary by his dad. That was what was in the mail. He's got his dad's grail diary, which has every clue he has ever followed for the search for the Holy Grail. Andy tells Marcus to call Donovan and tell him that we're in. They take off to Venice to meet Dr. Schneider, and we get a cool map thing for the first time, which is cool. And then Henry Jones is this, excuse me, to meet Dr. Snyder, who was Henry Jones's assistant. We're led to believe that it's probably a man. But before they set off, Donovan tells him, be careful. He says, quote, don't trust anyone. And let me tell you guys, Blessing, if Greg ever says don't trust anyone, he's hiding in your bed. He's hiding somewhere in your
bed. Definitely don't trust me. So usually the person who says don't trust anybody is, I told you, like, you know they're going to be a bad guy.
Exactly. Of course.
I also love that he had an actual diary, like the little adventure diary. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, man, Uncharted.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers.
Yeah. Where every time you look at it, you're like, wow, you're a really good illustrator.
Yeah.
You could add a career.
You could just put this all away and become an artist. Wow.
There was a moment later when there's the thing that he has to put the paper over and like use the shit to like make the mark. And my first thought was like, oh, just take a phone out, take a picture. I'm like, oh no, times are different. That would suck. It would suck if you had to record all that information down.
We'll get to that part because that is one of the questions I always had when I was a kid. I was like, wait a minute, he just did a wax drawing basically, or whatever they call it, of this
a rub.
He does a wax rub with charcoal on a wax paper and then dives into an ocean of petroleum, comes out, and that thing is perfect.
I'm going to go underneath and open my eyes in the petroleum.
Andy, I want you to draw me a picture of Tim and then jump into a fucking vat of gasoline with the picture and tell me if the ink runs a little bit.
Yeah, that was a little bit unrealistic.
It is a little bit. Of course, you know, we do have a cup that offers eternal life too, so you got to suspend a little disbelief.
Yeah,
Of course, we get the map. This is where we get the map, excuse me, as they fly to Venice, the most stinky of all Italian cities. That's on here, Greg. And then Dr. Snyder turns out, it's pretty gross, yeah, because all the canals kind of smell kind of gross. Oh. I don't know. I've never been to the south of Italy.
I don't know.
Like Sicily, but, you know, I hear that Sicily is pretty stinky, too. Dr. Snyder, turns out, Tim, is a woman, and so Indy immediately starts flirting with her. And Marcus is like, we have better shit to do here. For all line, do you permit me? And she's like, I'll permit you. I don't know. They have a whole thing back here, and I'm like, I'm not.
Oh, it's sexy.
They head to the library.
She, Allison Dottie, duty. Was only 21 during filming this, despite her character being 29 in the script. Harrison Ford was over twice her age, turning 46 during production.
Oh, God.
He liked it so much, when he got out, he married Calista Flockhart.
Oh, that's right. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If you don't know who Calista Flockhart is, she was, of course, Kat in Supergirl.
Cool.
Thank you. Thank you.
She did have her old show, her own show for quite a few years. But
for the record, okay, stop. A Blessing Eddie Oye Jr. You're a young man.
He's
what
not
is it, is what it? Is the show Calista Flockhart was on?
I could not Supergirl. Name it. I couldn't name it either. give me the first letter.
A.
Felicity.
Oh.
No, it's not Felicity.
Felicity? That's where you are. Are you even aware?
I can't remember what show she was on. My so-called life.
It was Allie McBeal. Everybody, Allie McBeal.
Who is Felicity?
That's Carrie Russell.
Carrie Russell. Thank you. Which one was the one where she was a spy?
That was Alias.
Alias.
Cool. All right. Right on. You guys are on my level right now. I appreciate it. Let's get back into the plot. They head over to the library, which is actually an old deserted church, to take up where Henry left off. Jones spots, of course, the easiest clues ever, which are the stained glass windows that correlate to the two pillars. But they can't find X until Indy gets elevated and looks down and says, huh, X literally marks the spot. Of course, he's referring to the Roman numeral 10. And then, I mean, Greg, I have a note in here also. It's like, this is why Kevin and I climb. This is why we used to climb.
When you're 5 feet above the tallest man in the room, you see the life in a different way. You know, that's why you're part of the climbing community.
Tell you what, the tile floors don't look the same when you're 10 feet up.
He's just like, this is another long line intersecting with another line. This isn't anything.
You can't see it when it's right in front of your face. We have a fun scene here, which I always thought was hilarious, where he's like breaking through the floor as the librarian stamping books, and he's like, what the fuck is happening? Indy and Ilsa hop down to the tomb below. Meanwhile, we get a new character reveal here. Chasm, I think is how he pronounces his name, and his men sneak up on Marcus and knock him out. Ilsa spots a painting on the wall that looks oddly familiar, and she says, what is that? And Indy goes, the Ark of the Covenant. And she goes, are you sure? And he goes, Pretty sure. We get a little flare of the Raiders music.
Really
in the background,
quick, I think
cool.
This is Joey in our chat saying that's neither one of those actresses. Alias was Jennifer Gardner.
Yeah, we know.
Yeah, that
Joey.
Wasn't
we
the point. That wasn't what Joey. If you want to be in the fucking room, you can be in the fucking room. But he wasn't saying what she was in. This is just how Nick's brain works.
Yeah,
he had the wrong show, so then we had to dial it back to where we were. But then he's just asking other questions.
What about Dark Angel?
That was Jessica Alba. Great show. She married her, if you remember the guy from it. If the guy who was like the anonymous dude. Yeah.
Cash Warren.
No, he was not on Dark Angel. I don't think he was on Dark Angel.
You remember like regular, just Angel?
His name is Cash.
Angel?
It is cool.
One of the reasons I liked Oni so much on PS2 is because I was like, I'm just going to pretend this is a Dark Angel game.
You did not like Oni. I don't believe you.
I was desperate for games on PS2. Yeah, I liked Oni.
I played Oni on my uncle's Mac. Weird.
Hell yeah.
Weird town.
Bungie.
Nick, give me your pitch for what the game Oni is all about.
Oh, Oni is great. Of course, Oni was short for Onisaka Tigers, and those are one of the best shoot ever come out of Japan. So, of course, I imagine it's just a business game. You're trying to get out there. You're trying to get your brand out there. Trying to compete with giants like Nike and Adidas and all those things. And in the end, you just get you build a company off, you sell it off.
Exactly, nailed it. Sorry, back
that's
to you
how right everybody now. Else has Adidas.
Adidas. I like it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Watch that shoe documentary.
Good time. Well, you should read Chew Dogs, really good too. Ilsa spots, and he breaks the wall and finds a well of petroleum, and he fashions. And again, Greg, if you were standing in a well of gasoline, would your first instinct be to fashion a torch?
Dude, he gets so close when he's finally like, climbing the wall, climb in it. Like, he gets out of my hand. That fire is really close to the
asking her for the lighter, I would have been like really scared about that.
I'm like, no, bro. Sure.
Your whole body's covered in it. It's crazy.
Let's see. He fashions the torch, and of course, when he does, he looks down and discovers a ridiculous amount of rats. Dude, I say this movies, still better man. Than the bugs. Still better than the bugs.
I love that they keep going with it.
Like, yeah, me too. I love it. It's just like, all right, what's the creepiest thing we could put? I'm just impressed with how many rats there were. The creative uses of the rats and how long the rats were in this scene. It's not like there was just one room with rats. Like, the rats followed them for like this entire little section here. 2,000 rats were bred for the production. They had to be bred specially, as ordinary rats would have been riddled with disease.
So what did they do with them afterward? Just let them loose in New York?
Oh, let them go. Yeah, no, back in Hollywood.
That was them burning up alive. That was actually them burning
dude,
up.
Dude, I was watching that, when they have all the rat noises and all these rubber rats as the fire engulfs them.
Yeah.
Like, fucking burn real rats in the 80s. Man.
I feel like we need to have a podcast within a podcast right now to rank the snakes, the bugs, and the rats.
Oh, wow.
So, Andy, can you give me this?
Yeah. What grosses you out? Is it a snake? Is it a rat? Or is it a bug?
Perfect. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Is It a Snake? Is It a Rat? Or Is It a Bug? Your podcast within a podcast. We're going to rank the disgusting things in all three of the movies so far. Will there be a fourth one, Tim, in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? Who knows? Kicking it off, I'm going to say this. Here's my list. We don't have to go hard on this one. I think the bugs are number one, rats number two, snakes number three.
Here's my thing. I agree that would be my initial knee-jerk reaction, but are we talking about the threat level presented? Because all the bugs were chill bugs.
But
the rats, even, like, there's rats fucking on top of her at one point, Miss Duty or whatever. Like, she, like, they're in her hair and stuff, and they're just, and Harrison Ford, you know, accidentally grazes one. Like, these motherfuckers will bite. I don't care how, they might not have diseases, but they still have rat tendencies. Blessing, I've tried to breed things. I've tried to breed things in captivity to see if I can change how they are. You can't change the nature of an animal, all right? So you come in, you squish a rat, that rat's gonna be like, hey, listen,
I don't think that's true at all.
I don't have a disease. I'm still gonna bite you, though, all right?
And they're dogs, right? Dogs take from wolves.
But we know that rats, like, when they're in heat, they'll do fucking anything. They'll even, like, chew through someone's stomach. We've seen it before.
We have seen it.
Rats are number one for me, man.
Forget everything.
Frank makes a good point, though, that snakes are fucking dangerous. If we're talking about threat level, those snakes look like they'd fuck Indiana up.
They were gardener snakes, except for the cobra that was behind the glass.
There was a cobra.
That was behind the glass. Are we talking as Indiana Jones? Or are we talking, we're prop people here on set?
I'll stop. I'm talking Greg Miller. You're the next Indiana Jones.
Sure.
But
and they're like, rank your we need you to do
one of the three scenes. You have to either be covered in snakes,
sure,
near rats tangentially, because there's only a couple on them, I guess we should say the fucking tarantulas are in there too, because there's a fourth tarantulas, which fuck that. Yeah. We'll just lump those into the insect. I know they're not insects, but we'll just lump them into the insects.
First off, Mr. Spielberg, I want to thank you for bringing me in to be the new Indiana Jones.
We were going to cast you in Ghostbusters, but you didn't cut it. You didn't make
that. I understand. Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm glad we're taking Indiana Jones in a Paul Blart direction. I'm happy to be the man who's
Indiana Jones
there.
Mall cop.
Anyways, on what you just described, I'd be like, put me in the tub of snakes. Those snakes are chill. Yeah, they're not trying to fuck with anybody. The bugs gross me out, period. But I was almost ready to do it. And then you mentioned the tarantulas. I'm like, no, thank you. I do not want those tarantulas on me. They're too far.
But we're
stick
not
bug,
just,
no big deal.
We're not just talking about the, like, Nick, are you talking about your Indiana Jones? You're playing Indiana Jones in this movie, or you are Indiana Jones and you have to get the treasure. And there are three ways to get to the treasure. You can go through the room of rats, the room of the bugs and spiders, or the room of snakes.
Oh, man.
I'm going
Andy, you're
through,
doing a great job hosting this podcast.
That's great, podcast. Man. You should host this podcast.
I'm going Ain't through the room of the bugs and spiders.
Oh, you're crazy.
Me you're too. Fucking out of your mind.
For what you just said, I'm really Indiana Jones, right? And I have to do this. Yeah, I'm going. The door opens and there's a bug room. I am fucking high stepping through like Deion Sanders all my way.
Yeah.
Pow,
yeah.
Pow. Just fucking, you know what I mean? Let's fucking go.
You're
you know
running
what I,
with the football.
you can't get me if you're fucking dead.
Yeah.
I do want to make it really clear that, you know, something we do often on Kind of Funny is we'll present a hypothetical and then we spend the next 10 minutes breaking down the like
rules of it.
Rules of it all, but like I think one of the most bizarre takes we've ever had is Greg Miller's response to this being like, oh, the cobra's fine because there was glass up because in the making of the fucking movie. So it's like in his mind it was even an option that Nick was presenting this as if you're an actor and you kind of have to deal with the situation. You have to be in rooms with said creatures.
Listen, man, I don't know. I just want to know where Nick's head's at, all right?
It's true. We have to. You don't know until you define it, Tim.
Well, Andy did
it
perfect. Andy did it perfect. He's like, you are Indiana Jones. There's a treasure. You got to go through a room of one of these three. What you going to
do? I think Nick was presenting it the way I was presenting it, but then Greg went immediately to, yeah, we are Paul Blarting the Indiana Jones franchise. And that's where it went off the rails.
Oh my God. Oh, all right. Back to the plot. I think we figured that out. I'm not quite sure what we did.
We got there.
They discover the hidden tomb of the night and they push the lid off as Indy's torch literally drips hot lava into the petroleum. But hey, guess nothing happens there. And then they see the shield itself. It has the writing, the remaining of the writing that they need from the Grail tablet. So Indy uses his dad's rubbing to copy down the remainder of the inscription as Chasm uses a single match to ignite the entire well of petroleum. I guess the match is what you needed. You needed that nice little precision point there, Greg.
Yeah.
The massive lumps of fire that were falling from Indy's torch.
It's not the same thing.
Explode,
you know?
The entire thing. Too much of a good thing, I guess.
I hate this. I'll tell you why. I don't like this.
Tell me why.
I don't like that Chasm and crew knew that Indy and Homegirl escaped that quickly. Like, there's no way they would have quickly been able to go through that area, see where are the bodies. They're not here. They must have gone up through the sewer. Like, no fucking way any of that happens. Like, they assume that they're dead. They just assume they're dead. Indiana Jones and Homegirl get out of the sewer. They're gone free. Movie's over.
Fair enough.
I loved the sewer shot though. It was great.
Oh, it's cool.
When they come out of the actual sewer grate in the street, I think that's amazing too. I thought that was a great shot. Of course, that leads to the boat race, and we get another fucking Steven Spielberg again. Like, I'm gonna fucking kill them all with a propeller. You can't stop me. There's no fucking airplanes in this, Steve. I'm gonna fucking get a boat propeller out of the water and fucking chop all the fucking heads off.
Yo, have you ever
seen a boat with a fucking propeller that far out? It was awesome. Yeah,
this is one of the many moments of this franchise kind of like building on things that it had done in the past. And it's like, when you see the propeller, it's like, oh yeah, this is the bigger, badder version of what we saw before. I love that. And I also love how many chase sequences are in this movie. Like, they must have made it a goal to be able to have a chase with, like, we got a chase on boats, we got a chase in planes, we got a chase in a train, we got a chase every way you can chase on feet, we're doing it. And they're all entertaining. Good for
them. Love the dude trying to call Indiana on the bluff of like, hey, if I die, you die here. And like, that's the third time in these movies that's happened. Mm-hmm. And for real, like, Indiana seemed like he was about to go all the way until the last moment. He was like, okay, no, I'm not in this. I can't do this.
Oh, but what's the final line he says? Because he's like,
he says, my soul.
I'm prepared to like lose my soul or something.
Yeah, have you?
My soul's like, expressed.
Oh, he's like, cool, yeah, he's like, if you don't tell me I'm going to kill him, he goes, you're going to kill us both. He goes, well, I'll kill us both then. He goes, my soul is prepared. How's yours?
Yeah.
And he's that's like, fuck, I ain't prepared to
that's
die.
That's such a fucking baller ass line. That's the coolest thing anybody's ever said in this whole franchise. I would have preferred if he said, your soul is mine. I would have preferred him to say that shit.
Oh, cool.
Mortal Kombat trailer looks real good.
Gotta watch it still. Of course, Chasm and his men are part of something called the Brotherhood of the Cruciform Sword. Blessing.
Sure.
Write that down. And they've been protecting the girl for 1,000 years. Why do you seek the cup of Christ? He asks Indy. Is it for his glory or yours? And then Indy lets him go. Chasm's like, hey, you let me go, so I'll tell you where your father is being hidden in a castle on the border of Austria and Germany. Marcus and Indy decipher the remaining text on the tablet and figure out the key to finding the Grail, which is the starting point. Alexandretta, remember that name because that is the name that gives Sean Connery an orgasm every time you say it. Alexandretta, oh my God, I need new pants, Tim. Indy tells Marcus to get a hold of Sala and heads to Ilsa's room to tell her the good news. But when he gets there, he discovers his room and her room have been ransacked. She didn't hear a thing because, Greg, those old-timey radios are really fucking loud.
She was rocking out to some records, man.
I was very confused. I was like, how in the world did they go through both of these people's rooms and they had no idea? Within the span of seconds, it seems like.
I thought of that too when I first saw this, and obviously it's a red herring.
So but how long is the shower that she's taking?
A lot of beans.
You know, back in the day, Blessing, it took a long time for people to get ready. It was slower.
People
back
were
then.
Really water dirty back then. They had to take longer showers.
It's true. Remember, they just bathed in a well of petroleum, so it probably takes a little while to get that smell off you.
It's true.
Andy's
still trying to get rid of snakes. He's just finding them everywhere.
God damn, I got another five. It's been 30 years. I think they're inside me multiplying now, Dad. I got to go to the proctologist. Let's see. They get into it and they start yelling at each other and then they make out. Ah, Venice. We get the map again. This time they're driving, but it still works, Greg. Indy gains entrance to the castle under the guise of wanting to see the tapestries. And then the butler's like, bro, if you're fucking Scottish royalty, I'm Mark Hamill. So Indy just knocks his ass out. And then they discover
Mark Hamill.
It's Nazi. I couldn't think of anything, man. I got Mark Hamill came out. Star Wars. Lucas. Yeah. And then they discover that this place is actually Nazi headquarters. Indy discovers a door with an alarm on it and extrapolates that's where they're holding his dad. So they go over to the other room and he swings in next door. When he does, of course, he gets broken over the head with a Ming Vase because Henry Jones is just not used to all this shit. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry about your head. And he's like, why did you fucking do that? He goes, I thought you were one of them. And he goes, they used the door. And he goes, all right, that makes sense. But he's more concerned. This is the first time we get a sense of the relationship of them. He's more concerned with the Ming Vase than he is with his son's head because he doesn't want to destroy anything from history.
This is also the Sean Connery reveal, right?
It is. That's right. Yeah, we haven't seen him yet. That's right.
Bless, what did that do for you?
I didn't put it together that it was Sean Connery until like 10 minutes later where I was like, this guy sounds really familiar. What's up with this? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, shit, it's him. And I thought, I mean, I'm not like the biggest Sean Connery fan. You know, I appreciate Sean Connery from James Bond and all that stuff, but he's not somebody I go crazy for. And so when I realized it, I was like, damn, that must have been a pop when that happened back in the day. Like, people must have been like, oh, snap. Yeah, that's like watching, I don't know, the next Avengers movie. And
or
like,
no,
Will
Interstellar
Smith
with Matt Damon. I was going to say Mark Damon.
I don't have a good like, analogy. But.
Is it like that, or is it like they saw the movie poster and saw his face on it, and they're like, oh,
no, they had no idea.
No, I said Interstellar.
Indy tells his dad about Alexandretta, and the old man flips out, and then Henry wishes he could have been there to see the knight's tomb. Indy tells him about the rats, and he goes, oh, I don't like rats. And then the Nazis want the diary because they're after the Grail. Thankfully, Henry sent it as far away as possible, except Indy brought it to him. And then he goes, they get obviously captured by the Nazis. And then he goes, you think my son would be that stupid? And then Indy's like, oh, fuck, I brought it here. Of course, then Indy takes one of the machine guns away from the Nazi and kills them all. And his dad's like, holy shit, you're a cold-blooded murderer. How could I have possibly raised you? And he goes, well, this is what happened when you don't talk to your kid for fucking 30 years, dad. I develop homicidal tendencies.
Making me count in Greek.
Exactly. When they get out, they discover Ilsa has been held hostage by Vogel, but Henry's like, dude, she's a Nazi. Don't trust her. But Indy's like, no, dude, I like her a lot because I got to make out with her. And he's like, don't trust her, man. So Indy throws the gun down, but it turns out you should always listen to your elders, Barrett. Indy asks his dad,
that annoyed me a little bit. Like, I wish Sean Connery was like, by the way, I know she's a Nazi because X, Y, and Z. He was just like, she's a Nazi, don't trust her. And he's just like, well, I know her, right? Like, I don't know, a little bit of dialogue could have solved that whole situation.
Yeah, probably. I bet you some stuff was cut that could have helped out a lot.
Potentially. Of course, she double crosses them and he goes, I told you. This is where we get the I told you don't call me Junior line. That was right before that, right before he kills the other Nazis. But
in the moment didn't surprise me because it was extremely telegraphed, and her saying sorry was like, that's really fucking bizarre and weird. But before this scene, I was convinced that the dude was going to turn on them, not her. So I was like, all right, that's actually some pretty cool shit that I didn't see.
Who, Donovan?
I forget his name. The weird dude that ends up in the tank later.
Donovan, Oh, Vogel. You mean the SS guy or the guy?
The good guy.
The good guy.
Donovan, okay, yeah.
That ends up not turning bad.
Oh, Marcus.
Marcus.
Yeah, yes. Marcus, the guy who's from the school. He got lost in his own museum. Yeah, there was a moment for me too, even I'm super rusty on it. And then I guess future spoilers, I know that Indy has a soft spot for Marcus. So it was like, I was like, when they came into that room, which we're about to get to, right? And there's the guy in the chair. That's where I thought. I was like, wait, is it Marcus? And then it wasn't the guy.
Of course, when they get tied into the chair, Indy's like, how did you know she was a Nazi? And he goes, she talks in her sleep. And he's like, oh no. My Eskimo brothers with my dad.
That was very fucking weird.
It was weird. It was a weird call. I always thought that was a little strange that I was like, that would be kind of an interesting thing that I would never, ever, ever fucking talk about with my dad. I would just,
this is the end of the 80s, man. You know what I mean? It was wild. This woman was clearly just another hole for them. They have no emotions at all tied to it. She is strictly there for sex. And it's like, no, neither of them care. That's weird, but okay. But I do like the fact, and I know this is, the meta for the viewer, but of like him being James Bond, him being Indiana Jones, and being womanizers, both is kind of their shtick, right? And like the fact that the Indiana Jones movies have churned through women throughout, this is an interesting, it's very weird and almost uncomfortable, but then it also is like, oh, that's a weird nod to, of course, Sean Connery, even if he was just Sean Connery on this adventure or whatever, if he was Dr. Jones on this adventure, would still have this kind of love affair.
Did Sean Connery actually
have sex with her?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh. Later on, they have a different conversation when you're old enough to be her you're old enough to be her grandfather. Well, you can't afford me for having the whatever he says about being a normal man. But they're just women, they're great to have sex with.
The only reason this sold it for me was just because it was Sean Connery. Like if it was any other actor, I would have been like, okay, this is a really weird thing. But I immediately caught the fact that they're like, okay, yeah, this Indiana Jones, that's James Bond. They're banging in every single one of their films. And so it lines up in that way. I will also say though, that I do like the fact that they have the twist here of her being bad, because that's kind of been over the course of watching the first two films, the smallest complaint for me. Well, small complaint for me in the first film, bigger complaint for me in the second film, where the way that they treat women has just been like all over the place, where very much Willie was just there to be there and to be a hole for Indiana Jones. Marion, I like better, but she still kind of had that thing of, oh yeah, she's here to be pretty for all these multiple different characters that are going to womanize her and do all this stuff. At least in the third film, for her to have that twist of, actually, I'm a bad guy and I'm doing all this shit and I'm tricking you, felt like she had kind of ownership over what she was doing a little bit, which I appreciate.
I appreciate that, and I also appreciated her having that deviating from the Nazis thing, you know what I mean, where she is there and they're burning the books, which I know you're gonna get to in a second, Nick, but like having her tear up and walk away, and then when she gets confronted by Indiana Jones, right, she doesn't scream, it is like, listen, I'm in this for the similar reasons to you, I'm there for the chalice, not the Nazis or whatever. Like it gave her another dimension where she wasn't just a bad, she wasn't the turn here wasn't her last character growth moment.
Going back to the Sean Connery and her thing, though, I didn't like it, especially because what I did really like about the character development of him and Indy was that Indy isn't the son of this legendary archaeologist that's also his total fucking badass. Like, it's that's like the normal story we see all the time where it's like, oh, there was a generation before me where he was fucking cool. This one's like, nah, this his dad is just a dope ass archaeologist. Like, that's it.
Sure.
You know, so that add the womanizing stuff, like, just it doesn't add up for like, because he's not James Bond in this.
I agree. That's why I think it's more of a wink and nod to us than it is to the thing. Even though he's not the adventurer, the swashbuckler, the Nathan Drake, the Indiana Jones, right? He is still just a cool dude going on adventure, super into his work, and that's attractive to people.
Yeah, I kind of took it that way too. Of like, there's some things he took from his dad, and then other things they just straight up didn't. And so, like, the womanizing thing, I just took as okay, that's a thing that he grew up with, and probably
they
had
got charm. In and out. The family got charm. Yeah, I mean, it was. I thought it was decent for that one moment of levity where they are tied together, and she goes, "I'll always enjoy my time," or "I had a great time with you," or whatever. And Sean Connery thinks she's talking to him, but she's talking to Indy. I feel like that moment was fine and funny, and I got a chuckle out of that. But the fact that they keep on kind of bringing it up, it's like, all right, man, you're making this like it doesn't need to be this gross. Like, just stop. Please stop bringing it up.
As we continue on, of course, it is revealed that Donovan is a bad guy as well. He orders Snyder to take the diary back to Berlin for the progress, and he's like, you should have taken my advice. I told you not to trust anyone. And he's like, well, literally, like, that's not what people say when they say that. I'm supposed to trust you. Indy goes on a tirade of how much he's like, you're never going to find that diary or the map. Marcus has it, and he's blending in. He speaks a million languages, and he's got friends in every port, and all this stuff is going to happen. You'll never find him. Then it cuts to Marcus, and he is lost as fucking turkey. He is totally overwhelmed and is about to
speak 17 languages. Yeah. He'll blend in. And then he says, does anyone speak English?
Yeah. Or Latin? Excuse me, hello? Does anyone speak? And then, of course, thank God Sala is there. He spots him and he takes him, but he does. The Nazis immediately grab him and they try to pass themselves off as being from the Office of Antiquities. And to which Sala's like, there's no Office of Antiquities here in Turkey. Run. They run over and he hides him in what he thinks is a shop, but it turns out it is the back of a truck with a Nazi swastika emblem on it.
This is my favorite running gag in this whole series, the fact that people keep going into things that are owned by Nazis or bad people.
Yeah, it's great. Well, in the 30s, they were everywhere. They were trying to take over literally the world.
But also the idea that John Rhys Davies doesn't turn around and be like kick that guy's ass because those two people sneak off, you know, shut the hatch. It's just like, man, everybody's kind of in on this, but we're not really worrying about the actual like impact of, oh yeah, those guys are bad guys too, John. Like, don't just kind of sit there and be like, wah, 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 and then go on to the next scene. It was just kind of silly. Like, a lot of these moments, I think, take me out of the movie because I am invested in, like, the relationships, and I want to see what happens with the, you know, towards the end of the movie and the climax of everything. But little silly moments like that just kind of take me out of it, and I don't love them even though I feel like I should. I don't know. It's weird.
Before we move on with the plot, let me tell you about our sponsors. Je ne sais quoi. In case you don't speak French, that means I don't know what, which I never knew. But now I knew, thanks to Babbel, the number one selling language learning app. One of Greg Miller's goals for New Year was to learn a new language, and Babbel has made the whole process addictively fun and easy with bite-sized lessons that he'll actually be able to use in the real world. And not just a new language, specifically French, so that he can expertly speak to his wife, Genevieve. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a language on the go, unlike the infamous language classes we took in high school. God, I hated those. Babbel designs their courses with practical, real-world conversations in mind, things you'll get to use in everyday life. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. That's pretty cool. With Babbel, you can choose 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, their Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Start your language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use code MORNING. That's BABBEL.com. Use code MORNING for an extra 3 months free. Babbel.com. Use the code MORNING. Babbel. Language for life. Back to the plot.
Henry tries to use Indy's lighter to burn through the ropes and then immediately drops it, which sets the whole place on fire. Donovan gets news that they immediately found Marcus. So he's like, great. We've been ordered to eliminate the American conspirators. Germany has declared war on the Jones boys. Fun scene where they start spinning around the fireplace and then they see the Nazi woman and she's like, and she smiles at him and then screams, alarm! And then everything breaks fucking crazy. Indy breaks free and they hide on the top of the fireplace, knock out the guards, head up to the top of the thing.
Love this set piece. The entire thing. It's such great, great fun action, and it just constantly spinning and just the gags from all of it. Classic.
Yeah.
Let's see. Indy is like, how the hell do we get out of here? And there's like a spiral staircase in the floor, but he doesn't know how to trigger it. And then when Henry sits down, he like falls down the staircase and stuff like that. They go down to the boatyard. Indy frees one of the boats and Henry gets into it and he throws him like his thing. He throws it back to him. He's like, we're not getting the fucking boat, Dad. We're letting it loose as a diversion.
And I was like, what a smart play. Yeah, let them get in the boat and chase the boat. And literally they like put one foot in the boat and they bust out in their motorcycle. I was like, all right, you could have given yourself more time.
Man, you could have had like you could have waited in there for another 10 minutes. It would have been long gone, been totally fine. Yeah, like this is another one of those moments where the moments are kind of enjoyable and fun to watch these characters do these things, but they start to just kind of accidentally fall into these situations a little too much with the swiveling door. As much as I enjoy it, it's like, all right, that's cool. And then the seat that then reveals the staircase, it's like, God, you guys just keep on accidentally, you know, kind of figuring these things out. And it kind of makes you look like fucking buffoons. And you guys are like scholars. Like, I want you all to kind of more intelligently figure out some of these puzzles rather than just happen upon them back to back. Like, the back to back was a little too much for me.
We get a cool action scene here, though, that includes Indy jousting with a Nazi on motorcycles and then throwing the remnants of his stick through the spokes of another tire, launching the dude into the fucking air. Also, the whole time, Henry is pretty nonplussed at this thing. They reach a crossroads, but Henry tells them they have to go to Berlin to get his diary. And he's like, we already have the diary. We know where we're going. He goes, no, you don't understand. Once we get to the Grail, we're going to face three challenges. All of those are outlined in the diary. And he goes, well, what are them? He goes, I can't fucking remember. That's why I wrote it all down.
Clearly, you'd remember them. He's like, no, I wrote them down so I wouldn't have to remember them.
let's see. And then this is where they argue for the first time. They actually have a flat out argument where he's like, this is an obsession with yours and I've never understood it, neither did mom. And he goes, oh yes, she did, all too well. Then he talks to him.
This conversation sucks. This is like straight up exposition of like, don't do it this way. Like, oh man, like you're gonna tell us the entire life story of this woman in four sentences. Didn't work for me at all. Yeah,
I'm with you.
Interesting. Berlin, Nazis are burning books. Indy knocks out a guard and takes his clothes, and we see Hitler waving to his troops. Ilsa has a moment where she cries while watching all the books burn because she has allied herself with this newly formed Nazi party that's going fucking crazy. We get a little humanizing for her, like we were talking about earlier. Indy catches up to her and takes the diary from her, and he's like, she believes in the Grail, not the swastika. And he says, yes, but you stood up to be counted with the enemy of everything the Grail stands or enemy, excuse me. You stood up to be counted with the enemy of everything that the Grail stands for. Who gives a damn what you think? And he takes it away from her, walks away. As he does, of course, they get caught up in the crowd. And this always gave me anxiety when I was a kid because they get pushed in and he turns around and he's face to face with fucking Adolf Hitler, who then takes the book out of his hand and signs it and then lets him on their way. Tim Getty's been kind of funny.
I'll answer your question before I even ask you, Tim. That is the real Hitler.
Holy shit, really? My question for you is, before going into these movies, if I told you that Indiana Jones gets an autograph from Hitler, would you have believed me?
No, not at all. I love this moment because it brought me back to Wolfenstein 2, because there's a similar kind of scene that goes on in that, game.
Yeah.
And I was hype. I was like, yo, I can't believe they went for it. They did it. And like
they
the way that he hands the exact book that fucking Hitler's looking for, right, to him, Hitler signs it, not realizing it's the book, and hands it back, and that's just like the end of it. I thought it was hilarious and was so well done. I loved it.
Same.
Totally right in there. I got some facts for you here. Most of the uniforms worn by the Nazis in the book burning scene are authentic Nazi uniforms, not replicas.
Wow.
A cache of old uniforms was found in Germany and obtained by costume designer Anthony Powell to be used in the movie. For the scene at the Nazi rally when Indiana confronts Elsa and steals back the diary, Steven Spielberg had all of the extras who did the Nazi salute put their other arms behind their backs and cross their fingers.
Smart.
Like, all right.
Smart.
Maybe that's how they get their hands. Like Steven Spielberg got his hands on fucking Nazi uniforms, and everybody's just like, "Yeah, that's cool."
Maybe ask that guy where he got. Maybe ask him where he got them. Yeah, like so how'd you get all these?
Is there not a government or a organization truck. That's like we should hold on to these? That's weird.
It fell off a truck. Let's see. Of course, then they take the first flight out of Germany, which is not a flight at all per se, but it is a very real looking Zeppelin. Man, that effect did not age well.
So real.
Wait. Okay, hold on. This is another thing. Bless. Mm. I'm watching this, and my first thought when I see this blimp is I'm like, holy shit, that's a big ass blimp. Where the fuck do they keep blimps? And I started thinking about it, and then it hit me. I'm like, oh my God, a week ago.
25 blimps.
Yep.
I saw Bless tweet about there just can't be that many blimps in the world. And I was like, that's a fucking random thing. Like, why did he say that? And it all just came together. And I'm like, there you go. Blimps are fucking weird, guys.
They're crazy.
There's only 25 of them. Only 25 blimps in the world.
So, like, even like the fucking Goodyear blimp, that's one of 25?
Yep. Wait, hold on. The 25 was a real number?
Yeah.
No, that's a real number. Look it up. There's only 25 blimps in the world that exist.
That's so fucking weird.
I thought you were just joking because they must take up so much room.
No, that was a dead
It gets even crazier,
aspect.
According to Google. Yeah, today the consensus is that there are about 25 blimps still in existence, and only about half of them are still in use for advertising purposes.
I feel
what
like
the fuck?
I think there's only like a cool thing that I've actually seen a blimp in real life. I never thought it was like a fucking big thing, but now it's.
I believe there are only 100 something people that actually have licenses to pilot blimps.
Wow.
Blimps seem like they are a much more common thing in our lives than the facts that are being stated here.
It's like quicksand. We're like you go your whole life thinking that there's going to be some situation.
Yeah,
where
but
you
like I've actually
quicksand.
Seen a blimp in my life. Like
yeah,
I've never
seen blimps.
I've never seen quicksand.
Man,
we should do it once. We should get a kind of funny blimp to fly over something important.
There's only ever like 20 football games ever happening, so that makes sense.
Of course, Vogel catches up with them, and he spots Henry, and this is where we get the no ticket line and the great scene that everyone rushes to get their tickets out immediately. And then Indy and Henry sit down for the first real time and have a quiet drink that they've had in ages, and Indy regrets never having connected with his father. He said, but Henry's like, dude, I was a wonderful father. And he's like, really? When? He goes, well, I taught you self-reliance. He's like, I never asked you to do your homework and any of that stuff. And he goes, no, you taught me that I was less important than people who have been dead for 1,000 years. We've hardly spoken in 20 years. And then Henry says, you left just when you were becoming interesting, which is such a fucked up thing to tell your kid.
Sure.
Totally missing the point there, of course. But then before they can go on farther, Indy notices that the Zeppelin is turning around. He goes, fuck, I thought they'd take a little bit longer to notice that I destroyed their radio. Not like they're using that thing every 5 seconds. So apparently every Zeppelin comes a little biplane below it, so they get in that thing. And he goes, I don't know, you can fly a plane. He goes, fly, yes. Land, no. This is going to be an adventure. They get chased by a couple of German fighters, and Henry accidentally chews up their brother with a machine gun. He blames it on the Germans. He's like, sorry, son, they got us. And then they land in a farm below, and as the fighters hail bullets down on them, they hide behind a little burn. And Henry is like just beside himself. He's like, these people are trying to kill us. And he goes, I know, Dad. He goes, well, it's a new experience for me. And the Indy says, well, it happens to me all the time. They steal a dude's car who was just changing his tire. He'll never get that car back. And they head into the tunnel where one of the planes tries to go after them. That crashes and then shoots out the other end. And then they get bombed. The plane, the car lands there, but does not explode. They get out. And then Henry gets a bright idea while they're on the beach to remember his Charlemagne. Let my enemies be the rock and the trees.
Quee, quee, quee.
He runs out of him.
Yeah. Indy shows a moment of pride for his dad, too, because his dad helped take that plane down. And then we're off. The Nazis pay off the local Sultan with a Rolls Royce, and he gives them everything they need to go after the Grail. As Chasm spies on them, Indy catches up with Sala, and they catch up to the Nazis. The Nazis spot Indy's sniper glint. And open fire. They probably should have talked to Chris Anka to get a better scope on that thing.
Yeah.
Chasm's been fired back, and all hell breaks loose, but Chasm is killed in the shootout. Indy steals some horses while Henry tries to rescue Marcus, but he gets caught. Great line while he's getting slapped, while Henry starts getting slapped by Vogel. He's like, where's the diary? What is this? Why did you think? And he goes, what does the diary tell you that it doesn't tell us? And he catches his hand for a second, and he says, it says that goose-stepping morons like you should try reading books instead of burning them. I was like, good fucking line delivery. Then we get the best action sequence in the movie, Indy versus the tank. Notable moments here. Car gets stuck on the tank's barrel, so they blast it off. Indy kills 3 Nazis with 1 bullet. Henry kills a man with ink and then blasts a truck full of Nazis to smithereens. And then Indy whips his dad to safety on one of the treads. And Vogel meets his end by riding the tank off the cliff.
A couple things here.
Another very real effect looking.
Exactly. A lot of things here. So when Indiana's bag is caught on the tank's gun and is being dragged along the wall, no stuntman was used. Harrison Ford did it himself. The crew just went along with shovels, tipping dirt and clay on him from above. As with the other Indiana Jones movies, Harrison Ford did many of his own stunts. According to the stuntman, Vic Armstrong, he had to pull Ford to one side and be like, yo, dude, let me do some work, man. Like, come on, which is great. And then, yeah, Barrett, I'm actually going to send you a clip that I want us to watch together, because the tank going off the side of the cliff and the guy dying is pure art, pure movie magic for
it's
sure.
So terrible.
And it's another thing where I'm sure it looked great back then, but now with the being exposed in HD, it's like, oh no.
The little fake body in the
It looks like the body's glued to it. So when it falls off, it's still holding on to the tower.
Model.
So go to 21 seconds or go to 16 seconds in there. But a quarter scale model of the tank was driven over a 50-foot cliff on location. So that that was real. That was a physical thing.
Yeah, it's just a JPEG.
But then ILM created further shots of the tank's destruction with models and miniatures. So
that's
here we got
hilarious.
This, but then look at this. Look at these toys here.
Yeah.
Barry, you can go. I think you can use period.
Look at the little action figure.
Awesome. Awesome.
It's the action figure. It looks like he's holding on for dear life.
Bad. Yeah, they use effects like this and like RoboCop too. Which I love it. I love seeing it. It looks so bad.
I love it.
Of course, we get a moment here where Henry realizes, holy shit, Indy might be dead. And he's like, wait, I never really even knew him. I never got to tell him anything. Meanwhile, Indy's climbing back up the side of the cliff, and he stumbles over to look over with him, with everyone who's looking over the cliff. He's like, what the fuck's going on? And they're all happy that he's there. He drops to the ground after hugging his dad. And then I like this shot too, because the hat just rolls back into frame, like, hey, you're not done yet. Let's see. Indy uses his father's. Okay, sorry. Indy, Henry, and Sala. They ride through the cool crescent moon, I think is what it's called, the Valley of the Crescent Moon. And they sneak up on the Nazis once they get to what I always thought was one of the coolest set pieces ever. And I remember how unbelievably I was like, holy shit, no way that the temple built into the side of the rock wall is a real place. And I learned that when I was a kid. I was like, what? Are you fucking kidding me? That's really cool that someone made that. Of course, it doesn't have all the intricate traps and shit in there. They've checked.
Damn.
Once inside, they get caught by the Nazis immediately as they are auditioning people to go in there and try to pass the challenges. But everyone keeps losing their head, if you know what I mean, Greg. So
I do, because it keeps getting chopped off.
And then Donovan, we get says, a total Red Skull Captain America moment right here. Where it's like, these Nazis, they want this and that. They're so small-minded, you know. I want something greater. I was like, wow, that's like
I'll be here after Hitler's gone the way of the dodo.
Yeah.
And so he's like, you're going to help me find it, Indy. And he's like, I'm not helping you do shit. And he goes, and he's like, shooting me won't get you what you want. And he goes, I know that. So he shoots Henry. And he's like, you have only one chance to save him, the Grail. And he's like, dude, it's a fucking myth. It's not going to work, bro. And he's like, well, whatever. So, of course, Indy uses his father's diary to one by the challenges, the first of which is the penitent man will pass. Tim, if I told you the penitent man will pass, did you think you'd need to kneel and then immediately panda roll?
Nope.
Because that's
definitely not that's what I'm talking about, but this movie lacks a little bit of cleverness, you know?
Well, it was clever back then.
Well, I mean, what was the line? The what?
The penitent man will pass. The penitent.
No, but he said something about bow, and that was
the penitent man kneels before God, is what he said.
That's what Indy does when he finally puts it together.
Yeah.
Which I would have told you. I mean, in the beginning, if it was it just is Nick, a little bit of church we remember, right? If you're saying your penance or whatever, and you're doing a physical challenge, you're like, I got to kneel.
Yeah, but I would not have thought for that second one.
No, the panda roll, I would have been cut in half, and I'd be like, come the fuck on, really?
Yeah.
We're missing a second bit of that. The what do they say about pandas?
And then roll over your shoulder. Yeah, I mean, panda's huge into the Catholic mythology,
Nick,
for sure.
There's only been one panda in the history of Catholicism that was given sainthood.
Mm.
His name was Choo Choo. He lived
Choo Choo Panda. Hello, Choo Choo Panda.
The Japan Zoo, the Tokyo Zoo.
I used to have an amulet being in St. Peter's Cross.
He saved 13 children from the zoo.
When Greg starts his sentence,
got him out of their cages.
Saved them from the zoo. Okay.
When Greg starts his sentence, I don't know if he's going to pick from something that has already been created or if it's all coming from up here.
Well, I just YouTube Choo Choo the Panda, and it's very much real.
God damn it.
Oh, cool.
Gotcha. Really?
There is a Choo Choo the Panda.
Did he save children from the zoo?
Wouldn't you like to know?
Turns out he ate a child. He just ate a child in front of me. The second, of course, of the challenges, proceed in the footsteps of the Lord. Seems pretty simple, but you have to remember, in Latin, Jehovah is spelled with an I. And
love
so
this.
He steps on the wrong one and falls through first. And he's like, fuck. And he echoes his father's statement. He's like, damn it, you idiot. In Latin, Jehovah starts with an I. So he spells it with the right way. Gets love the third it. Challenge, which is my personal so favorite, the path of God, which is a literal leap of faith. And I always loved this part when I was a kid because I think it's really cool visual effect.
It is really cool.
He figures it out and then throws sand on it. And I'm like, did at no point in the 1,000 years did anything fall on this thing? I digress. Once inside the chamber, he discovers an actual living knight who is still there. The third of the knights who was protecting the grail. But when the old man tries to fucking throw hands at Indy, he just falls over. And he's like, shit, you bested me. You must be my replacement. Congratulations. And he's like, no, I'm not your replacement. He tries to tell him, hey, the Nazis are coming. But then he's like, fuck, how do I explain what Nazis are? And he's like, okay, well, and then it's too late. Donovan and Elsa are there. Andy from Kind of Funny.
Nick, when we're talking about this old man, I always wonder about, you know, did he go in there that old? Or
no, I think he just throughout the years. I think he was a young man when he was a knight, but throughout the years he's just aged.
Because I always wonder that about elves in Lord of the Rings, right? Mm-hmm. Like they can't die. They live for thousands. But how
when does their body tell them to stop like aging, right?
Yeah. How like we look at Elrond, he obviously looks older than, you know, Galadriel or Eowyn. You know, I wonder at what point you don't die, but you're still aging really, 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 really slowly.
Well, I have to imagine at a certain point he's like, this sucks. I'm just going to stop drinking the water from the cup. And
is that how it works? Like, do you have to keep drinking the water? That's the question I had. I thought you just like drank once and it worked.
I got
to
piss.
Made me wonder, is Indiana Jones and his dad? Like, I thought Indiana Jones and his dad were about to be immortal for a second because
he's like, yeah, hey, Nazi, go drink from that thing. Indy, I've been pissing in it the whole time, don't you?
Dude, that was my first thought too. When the one guy starts melting into it and he's like over it, I was like, man, all right, well, clearly we're going to still drink out of that. So get away before you barf in it or whatever the hell you're about to do. You know, like right over it and stuff. Like, fuck off, man.
Lucy James joining us. What's going on?
Did someone say Lord of the Rings?
Hey, Lucy.
Oh, my God.
Lucy, hey, Andy has a question about your nerdy Lord of the Rings. When do elves stop aging?
Oh. I have no idea.
Get you know what I mean, Lucy? Fan. Like, I feel like it's something we haven't really talked what's about because I, whenever... Obviously, elves are immortal. They cannot die, right? Unless obviously. They are killed. But, you know, they age, right? It's like pigeons. Where are the baby pigeons? You know, where are the child British kids, you know?
Okay, well, the child British kids are around. You know?
Never seen them. They always dress them in like ties and stuff. They look like little adults.
Lucy James, I don't think we've ever seen you as a child, so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I have some terrible pictures of me as a child.
I feel like,
my parents when I was like 4, so I looked like a small old man.
Oh, okay. Got it.
You're proving our point.
You're proving our point.
That's why. That's what old men are in the UK. Children.
I just don't know how, you know, do elves age? They get older. They start to look older. I don't know.
Maybe it's a kind of thing like Asari matriarchs.
Oh,
you know?
Yes. Mass Effect lore. Like, love it.
Yeah, they live for a very long time, but then they have these different life stages where they look a bit older when they get to matriarch. Because Elrond looks way older than...
Yeah, than Eowyn.
Everyone
or...
else, except yeah. Like, you know, you've got Galadriel there. She looks stunning.
All right, I'm on Lord of the Rings fandom.com. Elves come of age at around 50 years old and are genuinely married around this age. Elves who marry late or never are said to have strange fates. Elves can tell the eyes and the voice of another elf if they are married. And if it is against the elf's true nature, because of the union. Elves have a taboo against incest, but marriage among second cousins is seen as acceptable. Totally whether fun. This results in degradation from strong bloodlines is unknown.
Now, Lucy, my follow-up question to you on this.
On this website. But, you know, good that they're against it.
I love that they're answering questions that we... They're giving us answers that we didn't have questions for.
We don't.
Speaking of incest...
They just wanted to go out. They just wanted to get out there and prove a point. Incest, bad. Bad no matter what you are in the land. Lucy, my final question for you today is, you're Indiana Jones, and there's 3 chambers in front of you. You have to get through one of them to get the secret treasure. Chamber 1 has snakes in it. Chamber 2 has a bunch of bugs and centipedes and stuff in it. Chamber 3 and tarantulas. And then chamber 3 has rats in it. Which one do you go through?
Snakes. But that's if I am Indiana Jones. If I was actually Indiana Jones, obviously you'd go for the one without the snakes. But yeah, I don't dig. I'm fine with spiders, but like millipedes and centipedes, mm-mm. And rats exactly. Are deadly, and I don't like them. Don't care for them.
Nasty. Right. Perfect.
All right. Perfect.
Thank you, Lucy.
You're welcome. Bye.
Bye.
The entire time I had my mic muted because I was laughing too hard. Where are all the British children?
They're not there. They don't know. They're just born. They go away for 15 years. They come out adults. Nobody knows.
Greg, well, I think Lucy just broke something open here where it's like, it's not that there aren't British children. There just aren't actual British old people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, everyone that we thought was old, they're just the children.
There's kids. There's babies.
Whoa. Benjamin Button.
Greg, you should have mentioned to her about the whole Bugs thing about Deion Sanders to the Deion Sanders run.
Well, everybody has their own way to get through it. And that I guarantee that reference would not have played.
Yeah,
she would have been Dijon Mustard. I'd be like, you know what? Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it, Lucy. Of course, Donovan and Elsa come in, and we get the moment where the knight says, you must choose which chalice you want to drink out of, and there's a bunch around. And so she picks the most beautiful golden bejeweled chalice for him to drink out of, and he goes, of course, this is the cup befitting of the King of Kings, dips it in the water, drinks it, and a second later just fucking disintegrates into old age and then to dust and explodes right in front of her. And then the knight goes, he chose poorly. And Indy looks around.
I think he was wrong.
Yeah.
That's not what's supposed to happen.
Of course, then Indy goes around and looks, and he spots the one old, tattered bronze cup that's much smaller than the rest and super tarnished. And he goes, this must be it. This is the cup of a carpenter, is what he says. But there's only one way to find out. And he dips the water and drinks it, and then immediately looks at the knight. And the knight's like, you chose wisely. And yeah, I'm like, dude, a little faster next time, homeboy.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I'm yeah, I was waiting here. For like the camera cuts, and then it goes to commercial. And like,
because like, here's what I would be. I would have like five cups
the
around
Grail,
me.
Like interlude where it's like 5 minutes of just like the fucking music. That would have been great. Right.
Let's see. Oh, by the way, you chose wisely, but heads up, the Grail cannot be taken across the seal of the temple. That is the prize of immortality. It only works here. You want to play some dominoes? I'm really fucking bored. I've been here for 1,000 years. Indy runs the cup back to his father and helps him drink from it, and then he pours it over his injury, and the bullet wound washes away with the water. Ilsa, of course, then grabs the cup and tries to cross the seal, but despite Indy warning her to stop, she doesn't listen. She says, we've got it, we can run out, and then the whole temple starts coming down around her. A giant fissure opens up, and she falls in, losing the goblet on a small shelf below. When she tries to reach for it, Indy grabs her, but he's like, you gotta give me your other hand. She's like, I can almost get it. And of course she can't, and he loses his grip and she falls to her death. And then the ground beneath him gives way, and he finds himself in that exact same position with his father holding his arm, and he's literally touching it. And this scene killed me when I was a kid. I was like, just fucking grab it, bro. Just grab it. And he goes, Dad, I can almost reach it. Dad, I can almost reach it. And his dad looks at him and says, Indiana, let it go. And he realizes his dad's right, grabs his hand, hoists him up. They run out as the whole place comes down around them, and they get out safe without the Grail. He gives his touching moment where he talks about Elsa, and he says, she never really believed in the Grail. She thought she found a prize. And then Indy says, well, Dad, what did you find? And he says, illumination, as he looks at his son. And then his dad proceeds to embarrass Indy in front of all his friends by telling Sala that Indiana is not his real name. His real name is Henry Jones Jr., which is why he keeps calling him Junior. And he goes, we named the dog Indiana. And then Sala laughs at him way harder and way longer than he has any right to. And I know that feeling very, very well. And of course, all four of them ride off into the sunset.
So a couple of facts I have for you here. Donovan's death sequence by rapid aging was the first ever all-digital composite shot. In previous movies involving computer-generated visual effects like Young Sherlock Holmes and Willow, CGI elements were output to film and then added to the final print using optical printers. For this movie, ILM scanned several filmed makeup transformations of Donovan's demise and morphed the elements together digitally. By doing this, film was, for the first time, scanned, digitally manipulated, and output back to film, rather than arranging film elements with the optical printer. It took a week to film the death scene. But
and that's where cinema started to die.
The death count in this movie, body count, death count, same shit, was 50. 13 by Indiana Jones. And in the movie, Henry Jones Sr. says, we named the dog Indiana on finding out his son's nickname. George Lucas, if we remember from the facts from the first movie, named Indiana after his dog Indiana in real life. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't the only inspiration from his dog. His dog also inspired Chewbacca.
Oh.
What a Wookiee. There we go. That's all I got for you, Andy. Hit me.
Seven syllables in the middle. You need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
I gotta say that your little drum machine there, it had an extra kick today. I liked it.
Yeah, well, did I added
it sound,
a clap.
Did it sound nicer to you guys?
There's a clap. There's a clap sound there now.
You're killing
that
it.
That last
there,
hi-hat really brought it together.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. Yeah.
You... I meant to say, I hit the wrong one. Uh-oh, Tim.
Tim's gone.
Bye, Tim.
Drop some shit. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form, just like Josh C. did. This is a long one. It's a long one. There, it looks like there are six haikus in this.
Great. Wow.
All comes full circle. Bond is playing Indy's dad. That's pretty rad. Return of Sala and Dr. Marcus Brody, too. Far more humorous. Damn, he dropped humorous in a haiku.
Mm-hmm.
Easy number two. Much more lighthearted movie. Still pretty goofy. Businessman Nazi. Jones, don't trust anybody. Sure thing, Henry Ford. Such great chemistry. R.I.P. Sean Connery. What a great story. The search for the Grail, a treasure you cannot keep. She talks in her sleep.
I like it.
I hear the secrets. What was she saying in her sleep? I'm a Nazi. Not a lot of men. Really? Nazis.
She's like, what I like to imagine is she was like,
like I really made a lot of good points. She was saying, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, she wasn't a Nazi. She just...
I work for the Nazis, yeah. But I'm not a Nazi.
Yeah.
So she was like the monkey from the other one where they're like sympathizers, right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You're right. She is a lot like the monkey Nazi sympathizer. I forgot about that guy.
Jeremy the Zook Zuccarello writes in and says, hunting for the Grail hot on the Nazis trail. Choose poorly. Big fail.
Nailed it.
Joe Merton says, what'd you find, Dad? Nazis. I hate these guys. Illumination. Again, good use of a big word in a haiku. And then to finish this out, of course, we have Miscellaneous dropping another big one here. The plot in haiku form. Flashback, Indy steals. Knock off, Indy on his heels. Then the sheriff squeals. With his father's book for the Grail, Indy must look. With a secret crook. The truth uncovered, Indy one. Dad, another. Eskimo brothers. A knight to protect the Grail. You must now select Indy's choice. Correct.
Oh, I think he's going to say collect. collect
price. Miscellaneous, man. Too good with these haikus.
Very, very good.
You'll love it. Gotta love it. All right. Little ragu bagu.
Ragu. Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast where we rank all the villains of Ragu Indy, the Indiana Jones universe. Currently, the list looks like this. Number one, the Thuggy Cult from, I don't even know what the hell this means. Thuggy Cult, and then it says Amalia Room. I think I might have been trying to say Indiana Jones, but who knows? Who knows, you know? And then it's Taunton Bellic from Indiana Jones 1. Where
Temple
do we want
to
put
I think you
were more Nazi? Amalia Temple Room, of Temple of Doom, of course. That makes perfect sense.
Of course.
Thanks.
Or
of
Mola
course,
Ram, which was the bad guy's name in that.
Sorry?
In Temple of Doom. Mola Ram was the bad guy's name. I think that might be what you were trying to put down. It doesn't matter.
I like Tim's answer better.
Temple of Doom. So you're Doom wrong. Of Temple. I'm there sorry. Blessing, okay. I apologize. I'm going to turn my camera off now.
I forgive you.
Where do we want to put more Nazis?
Where?
And the guy and the girl. The sympathizer.
I would say the bad guys in this one are pretty low.
Yeah, right?
They weren't the highlight.
They're not
of this.
The star of the show.
I would say so too.
Although I do like the girl being bad. I thought she did a pretty good job of that overall.
Sure. And I like the conflict she had.
Yeah. I still put it all last.
Yeah. I don't think there was like one solid bad guy in this movie. You know, there wasn't like what was the guy's name in two again? Amalaram?
Mola Ram, I think is how
Mola
you say
Ram.
It.
You know, like, I think there's something special about having a center person be the bad guy who's, like, tearing out hearts out of chests and stuff. And this movie didn't have that. And so, like, you know, there are Nazis in the first one. It's cool. There are Nazis in this movie again, right, which makes them there. But I don't know. I would put this number three.
I think ripping a heart out of a chest is almost as close as gross to Ilsa banging, like, an 80-year-old man.
Fair.
Think about that, everybody.
I'm thinking about it.
It's a big sacrifice that she did to like make him. But,
like,
think
she,
that
like
she's friendly.
She came through at the end, right? She kind of had the turn. She like betrayed
the
other guy.
She killed Donovan. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, it was clear that she wasn't super into the whole Nazi thing. She was like, I'm just kind of like doing. I just want to protect the Holy Grail. I don't fucking agree with this. These psychopaths or whatever.
She was a Nazi.
I think that they are pretty low as well. They just weren't really too exciting for me. I think the movie Agreed. Was mostly focused around Sean Connery and Harrison Ford.
Number three. There it is.
There it is. Boom. Bada bing, bada boom.
Now it's time to rank the movies. Currently, number one, we have Raiders of the Lost Ark. Number two, we have Temple of Doom. It's number one for me.
Yeah. It's number one for
and
me.
And honestly, I don't think that it's like by a long shot. I just think that like these movies all have something really good in each one of them. And so far, none of them have like fully hit for me where I'm like, this is one of my favorite fucking movies of all time. And I kind of expected one of the three would have. So still number one for me. Bless, what do you think?
I appreciate all three of these movies. I'm right there with you that for me, this movie is number one. I think Temple of Doom brings something. Raiders of the Lost Ark brings something, and this movie kind of brings a bit of what both brought and does it in a way that still feels solid, even though I have critiques here and there about all three of the films. But overall, like, I had a really good time. I think this is a really great trilogy of movies, and I now understand why people hold them up as classics because they are very good action movies.
Totally agree with Bless. Totally agree with everything Bless just said. I'm glad we did this series. I probably would have never watched the movies had we.
It's not over yet. It's not over yet.
Yeah, why are you guys talking about it? It's over. We got one more fucking week.
We got one more movie.
With arguably the best.
Yeah, Serpino, what do you say?
No, I mean, we're all unanimous on this one, I think. I love this movie. I think this is the best of the trilogy so far. And I would put it number one.
Craig Miller, are we unanimous?
No, it's a great movie, but I would put it below Temple of Doom for me personally, but I also would have put Temple of Doom at number one. So this would have been my number two, but on the current rankings, I'd put it number three. But it's also, I think, exactly what everybody said of just like, or actually more what Tim said, right? I don't think there's one that's head and shoulders above the other. I think they're all super enjoyable, great films.
There you go. We will return next week for Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And I got to tell you, I'm hyped for this just because I need to know how it is, what people have been talking about. Cause I don't know.
I'm excited for Shia LaBeouf.
The boof.
Andy, boof us out. One more week to nail it.
All right, you're up to that.
Okay.
There it is.
Yep.
That last one.
There it is.
That got me.
We hit it.
Bye, guys.